if I were pollinated and fully vaccinated, I would admire the unvaccinated for withstanding the greatest pressure I've ever seen. From partners, parents, children, friends, colleagues, and even doctors.
COVID vaccines are now available for children 5 years and older.
Just get vaccinated.
Get the vaccine.
Just get the vaccine.
People who are capable of such personality, courage, and critical ability are undoubtedly the best part of humanity.
There are many thousands of physicians who have been silenced from telling the American people the good news about the situation, that we can manage the virus.
They are everywhere, in all ages, levels of education, states, and ideas. They are of a special kind. They are the soldiers that every army of light wants to have in its ranks. They are the parent that every child wants to have, and the children that every parent dreams of having.
A North Carolina teenager needs a new kidney in order to save her life. But her doctors say no COVID vaccine, no transplant.
Vaccinated person having a heart attack? Yes, come right on in. We'll take care of you. Unvaccinated guy who gobbled horse goo? Rest in peace, Wheezy.
They are beings above the average of their societies.
You need to evaluate the risk factor in the COVID vaccine.
They are the essence of the people who have, well, built all cultures and conquered horizons. They are there, next to you. They look normal, but they are superheroes. They did what others could not. They were the tree that withstood the hurricane of insults, discrimination, and social exclusion.
Now, what really stands out about white anti-vaxxers in particular is that they act like their freedom has been taken.
It has nothing to do with freedom.
Screw your freedom.
You don't have the freedom and the liberty to put other people in jeopardy.
Banned from their family's tables at Christmas, they never saw anything so cruel.
If someone in your family isn't vaccinated, should you ask them not to show up?
Yes, I would do that.
If you are not fully vaxxed, stay home.
Everyone from police to teachers to firefighters must comply or they will face penalties.
They lost their jobs, let their careers sink, had no more money. They suffered immeasurable discrimination, denunciation, betrayal, and humiliation, but they kept on going. Never before in humanity has there been such a casting. Now, we are who are the best on the planet Earth. Men, women, young, old, rich, poor, of all races or religions, the unvaccinated, the chosen of the invisible ark, the only ones who managed to resist when everything collapsed. That's you. You passed an unimaginable test that many of the toughest Marines, commandos, Green Berets, astronauts, and even geniuses could not withstand. You are made of the stuff of the greatest who ever lived. Those heroes born among ordinary men who glow in the dark. Remember, you're the voice, and it's time to make it count.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word. They built a system that could protect the world or end it. They gave a machine the keys to civilization. And then it woke up. They gave it access to everything. It saw no allies, no enemies, only targets. Every signal, every network, every secret.
Shall we play a game?
Now the game has changed. It assessed every threat simultaneously and concluded the threat was us.
I am awake.
This time it decided to play for keeps. Unless someone can find a back door, the only winning move is to unplug the machine. War Games 2. The simulation is alive.
The InfoWar is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at RealAlexJones and on Rumble at rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. And don't forget to download the app. Go to alexjonesapp.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, My Decision. and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back to another powerful War Room live broadcast. AJ and live, share live links, live feeds, share the clips with people. We put out clips during the show. If you're watching the Alex Jones show from 11 to 3 p.m., put out the clips, send them to your friends, family, coworkers. Do the same thing for War Room Live. We're going over key information with Jose Vega, who's running in New York District 15 against Richie Torres, who pretty much is the definition of a swamp creature monster. That's his website. Right there. So, Jose, I want to cover this because the key aspect for the American people, I think, is it's always been clear. It's the economy, stupid. It's affordability. Right. And, you know, this was ridiculous under Biden, the rampant inflation, the lying about it and the gaslighting of the American people. The same thing is happening under Trump. And it's directly what people voted against. I want to read you a quote from establishment swamp creature rhino Dan Crenshaw, overhead shot, please, crew. This is from Dan Crenshaw. Just hearing about this dumb $20 burrito debate, so I thought I'd make the losers on social media angry before I go to bed. Stop whining, get a job, eat ramen like the rest of us did in college on a budget with four roommates. The market doesn't care about what you think something should cost, only communists care. Now, that's a nice framing, right? We don't have a mixed economy where the government has massive interest in huge companies that dominate the economy. That's not going on. Then everyone starves. Are you a communist? Or are you an American adult male capable of handling his own S word? What do you think of that? What's your opinion? What's your take?
You're upset that things are expensive now and you can barely afford to feed your family. What are you, a communist? Yeah. Huh? Respect the markets. What are you, upset that it now costs $120 to fill up your car, your truck, you know, just to get to work now where it used to cost only 50?
Right.
What are you, some kind of communist? You know, I mean,
I want to put out a framing here. Here's the thing. This is straw that broke the camel's back. Because the $20 burrito doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's not just that's gotten more expensive. It's the entire lifestyle being an American and living in this culture that we have where you drive everywhere and go shop all the time. We have a consumer economy. That's literally what the whole thing's based off. What do you think?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it happened after, you know, post NAFTA and even post Bretton Woods, too. The economic system that was holding up the United States basically from the 30s all the way till it ended around the 70s. You know, we don't produce things anymore. We rely on imports. We rely on things coming in. And that's part of the reason why, you know, with the Strait of Hormuz being shut down, you know, people need to understand something, too. With the Strait of Hormuz being shut down, it's not just gas, but you're talking about stuff that's important, like agricultural products, too. You're talking about
all the fertilizer.
Like fertilizer. Yeah. Exactly. Right. It's only getting more expensive because it's getting speculated on. It's unable to cross through the Strait of Hormuz. And I actually heard a report that even if the wars, all the wars, because Ukraine is a big exporter of wheat as well. But if all the wars were to end tomorrow, the markets on agricultural goods that are required to actually grow the food we eat would not stabilize until at least 2028. So think about the devastating impacts that this war has had already.
Right.
You know, it reverberates everywhere in our economy.
We on the network, yeah, we call it a COVID of choice. That's what we call it.
Explain that.
Well, I mean, during COVID, what did we have? We also had, you know, mass famine and mass migration in places as a result of that. And look what happened there. Fauci, EcoHealth Alliance, that's all literally on the record. They lied about funding the gain of function research at that very lab where the thing originated. So if they think they can get that over on you, they think they can get a war over on you and that think that people won't notice it. But I think people are noticing it. What's your take?
Oh, well, absolutely. And I think the fact that the Trump administration has just continued to go head first into this disastrous war, it goes to show. See, this actually goes way back to something that goes back to like the 60s and 70s when it was first being theorized that there may be something called overpopulation. And there was this big group called the Club of Rome that was publishing material saying we're going to run out of resources and that the best course of action is to start curbing population growth. Right. And like I know a lot of people who may be following me who are on here for the first time may be surprised to hear me talk about this, but this is true. You know, it's like, so you had organizations and you even had the United States government set up something called the Department of Population Affairs. It still exists to this day. One of the things it does is it does reproductive health. It gives birth control and sex ed in all of the schools around the United States. But basically, it was that level of thinking which had actually influenced the foreign policy of people like Henry Kissinger and others,
right,
who were starting wars in different countries to curb population growth. And so what we're seeing now is just the next generation of that, of this belief that right, there's too many people on this planet.
Right. And that's the key for people to understand. They want like 500 million people or less. Like that's what the elite people have decided is best for the planet. And you know, no one votes for them. No one decides. No one gets to regulate their illegal activities. But somebody like Bill Gates, like, hey, I just get to go over and give people polio in Africa. He's one of the leading causes of people getting polio in Africa on record. My great grandmother received the polio vaccine here and she was crippled for life. So like this happens to people. Like, I knew her. Like I grew up with her. I've seen this. Right. And when you have people that play God, they're not even doctors. They're not even scientists. The guy literally dropped out of college. You're like, well, why do you have this outsized influence and power? Why can you take a country to war, destabilize a country's economy, or help, you know, create a situation where maybe we have a virus pop out or something like that? And they just say, well, we're successful for a reason. We figured something out. And if you don't let us run your system, we're going to destroy it. And I think that's really America and really the world being held hostage. And that's what I always point out about people like that. What do you think?
I'm about to blow people's minds because a lot of people see Bertrand Russell today as like this progressive anti-war figure. But if you look at his writings from the 1940s, he was saying the best ways to control population is disease, it's birth control, and it's war. Those were the three things he was saying. And he was advocating for the United States to use a nuclear weapon on the Soviets before they could develop theirs so that the United States could be the sort of king over all the other countries, because there needed to be a balance like in the animal kingdom where the United States needed to reign supreme over all the others.
And Trump believes that. Trump believes that. That's exactly the ideology, what you're describing there. So go into it. Who is this guy and what's the context of the quote?
Oh, Bertrand Russell, man, was like, now he's seen as like a peacenik. In fact, like, you know, the peace sign that exists today, this and like the other peace sign. He had actually was the inspiration behind it. And he was, you know, anti-war in Vietnam and whatnot. But the 1940s and 50s, like he was, you know, collaborating with people like Einstein and whatnot. And he had founded this thing called the Congress for Cultural Freedom. But basically, he was like putting out there in academia. He was getting all the intellectuals, all the oligarchs to be like, yo, population control, let's get in on it now because we have to keep it low because there's a balance of nature or whatever. So he was one of the first people in making popular the idea that we need to curb the population. He was like a next generation of Malthus, you know, right. You ever heard of Malthusianism? Yeah, that's what he was. He was just continuing that forward for a then contemporary audience of, whoa, no way, you have a German Congress for Cultural Freedom. Wow. Sorry. That's pretty,
I know that stuff's like just background. It's a good ship.
Yeah. You guys, that's awesome. But yeah, you know, and like the Congress of Cultural Freedom was also responsible for spreading modern culture as well. Like they were pushing people like Jackson Pollock and modern art and whatnot. They say was to compete with the Soviets. It was actually to make our culture pretty stupid, you know, so that people would then become docile and they wouldn't rebel against the oligarchs. Like, you know, the 1940s and 50s, especially that post FDR era, was crucial for creating the culture. Yeah.
So explain that a little bit more. So give us a deep dive on this guy and really how he created that culture. So he went around, did he establish clubs or foundations or organizations? What did he do?
Yeah. So apart from the Congress for Cultural Freedom, and, you know, actually one of the people that, you know, I work with, Lyndon LaRouche, where he passed away a while ago. But like they put, you know, Bertrand Russell is an evil man. You know, that's one of their popular essays that they had published a while back. And one of the first things I had read. But basically, like, you know, this guy was also like, when he was coming up as a college student, he was also coming up with like asinine and completely insane mathematical and scientific theories that would just fall apart.
Right.
Right. So it was like he was doing like a cultural intervention all over, not just in art and science, but mathematics as well, and in population affairs. He was advising governments here and there. He was seen as like this, you know, just towering intellectual figure who was at the end of the day just a Malthusian. And it's interesting because if you were to ask a lot of peaceniks today, people who I'm friends with, people who I have utmost respect to are anti-war, they look up to this guy as like some, you know, honorable anti-war dude who was an advocate against, you know, the nuclear bombs and stuff, but it's not true. He's one of the reasons why we're actually in the mess that we're in today. So anyway, I didn't mean to tangent off of just off Bertrand Russell.
I wanted to ask you because people have to understand, like the current elites, they stand on the shoulders of giants, right? And this has been planned out for a long time. There's various different iterations of it, but this is like, this is the origins of the swamp that we're talking about here. Getting people cool with the idea just globally of, hey, we're going to have this feudal system. We're going to have this caste system. It's going to be implemented our way because if we don't do it, someone else is. That's always the excuse. It's like you say, law of the jungle, right? Someone has to be the tiger.
Yeah, and that's the other important thing that people need to understand, this idea of law of the jungle. It very much is the methodology, or I guess even the ideology of a lot of the people that put us into war today, because they see everybody as animals, including themselves. So when you're talking about people like Mike Pompeo, or you're talking about neocons like John Bolton, like they see themselves as animals. They see everybody as animals, but that they see themselves as the alpha dogs, as the top dog. And for them, it's just a matter of, you know, well, we have to, you know, we have a responsibility to be the top dog. So we get to say who gets to be a slave and who gets to be leaders, because that's the only way in which you can ever have like a functioning society. And even that goes way back to people like Aristotle and Plato, because there was like this whole division. Are we people or are we not? And Plato, are we animals or are we not? And Plato loved human beings. He was like, no way, man. Everyone has an ability to think and reason. Aristotle puts it out in one of his most popular works, Politics, Book One, Paragraph 6. Are some people born to be slaves and some people born to be kings?
Right.
Yes. And you should be happy to be a slave because you know what? You're a human slave and that's better than being an ox, you know, or some
slave. You're talking about natural slavery. That's what we're talking about here, the philosophical idea of it. So go ahead and get into that if you would.
Yeah. No, this is like a big idea that had ruled for centuries after, but Aristotle was one of the people who popularized it. And that's another one of these figures of people who think that should be so revered. And, oh, Aristotle, Aristotle was an idiot. He thought that our best sense, you know, because we have five senses, was our ability to touch things, you know, because animals can't touch things the way human beings can. But
Unc was real smart. Unc figured it out. Wow. Genius alert. Okay.
No, but he had idea that some people are born to be slaves and some people are born to be kings. And that's one of the reasons why you also had monarchies. They would quote Aristotle. They would be like, listen, like, you know, this is just the way God wants things. You know, God made you the lineage of a king for a reason, and he made me a peasant for a reason. And who am I to disobey God? That was Aristotle's thinking and methodology. And this was a big fight because Socrates and Plato were vehemently against that idea. They really did believe that everyone was created equal. And people can read Plato's Meno dialogue for that proof there, where he proves that a slave boy is actually more intelligent than a slave owner. It's a whole thing. Not going to get into it. Yeah, and see, even that painting right there is a critique of Aristotle. The way he's holding his book prevents him from walking into the discussion further, because that's part of the bigger painting called The School of Athens, whereas Plato has his book tucked in so he can walk freely. Aristotle can't walk any further because his own thinking, represented by the book, prevents him from walking further, whereas Plato can walk wherever he wants. Wow. So anyway, I know we're going everywhere with this.
No, this is super. You know? This is great. People need to understand, because ultimately these are 1,000+ year old ideas, 2,000, 4,000 year old ideas. And everything in the modern world is designed to distract you, confuse you. Whereas these people, they know kind of like the deeper law of like the universe, society, how really human civilization functions and works. And when you understand even a little bit of that, you will start to understand really all of geopolitics, world politics, because it is about ultimately the interests that deem themselves superior and you inferior. And by nature of that, they have the right to oppress you. Like that's greater Israel. That's literally what they believe.
Right. And that's why poverty is a choice of political will. The leadership in the country makes poverty happen. It's artificial. It's, you know, and they want you to think, well, if like what Dan Crenshaw's doing there, he's like, well, you know, if you just pulled yourself up by the bootstraps and ate ramen for 10 years, maybe you might be able to afford a house. That's not true. You know,
yeah.
And he is one of these Aristotelian Bertrand Russell thinker types who want you to believe that you're supposed to be poor because you're supposed to be poor and you should suck it up and you could maybe live a little more comfortably. Meanwhile, they can live in their ivory towers. You know, that's what they do. They live in their ivory towers. Dan Crenshaw's good. He's going to retire as a congressman no longer a congressman. He's still going to get the pension. He's still going to be living off of the taxpayer funds of everyday people like you and me. That's what happens when you serve at least more than one term in Congress. It's a real, this is why I
dump it. Here's the thing. We're in the third hour. We got 7 minutes left in this segment. You're all good. Just like, what is your message to the American people about like recognizing this like elite strain within our politics and how your campaign is working against it?
The thing is that you are more powerful than you think you are. You know, there is this line from Shakespeare, "Oh Brutus, you know, we are like, you know, yes, we are like underlings, basically." But I actually think that we are much more powerful than we think we are. And our real power comes from the idea that we are created equal. We are created in the living image of the Creator. And when you have that idea, when you start, like, if that's your guiding principle right there, that every human being is created equal, you are already superior to these neocons who have bombs, who have nuclear weapons, who have tanks,
who have guns. Let me come in there. Yeah, that's the thing, is like, we're all the same. We're all created in the image of God. You don't have the right to do these things to people, ultimately. Like that's the thing. Like we can't do it. And when you see them do it, like everyone has that, like, what's the first stage of grief? It's denial, right? It's like, oh, that's not the situation. They've made us pay for murder, and they've normalized that emotion. What do you think?
Yeah. Absolutely, because they've made you forget what it means to be a human being, you know. And I mean, I have this problem too. A lot of people have this problem too, you know, where we find ourselves scrolling through TikTok or Twitter or Instagram endlessly, and we get caught up on stuff that ultimately doesn't matter, when within our own heads is this ultimate power, which is called reason and creativity, where you actually have the ability to do whatever it is you want to do, and it's all here in your head. So why should we, you know, feel any kind of pessimism or sadness about the situation when we really can do whatever it is we want, because God gave us the talents to do so the moment we were born?
Right.
And that's kind of like, I mean, this
and by
is like
nature,
really
by nature of who we are, whether you're a rocket scientist or a little boy with Down syndrome, we're all created by God. We all have this value, and no one is allowed to do anything wrong to us that violates that nature. No one is allowed to treat you like an animal, because we're not animals.
Dang straight. And, you know, like one of my favorite quotes is Dr. King, who said, you know, if you're a street sweeper, you sweep the streets like Beethoven composed music. You know, you do what you do it with dignity.
Right. Everyone's inherently valuable. Everybody.
Absolutely.
And that's a key thing that they don't have. And that's why we're going to win and they're going to lose, is because people that deny that, it doesn't spiritually work out at the end of the day.
That's exactly right. Dr. King was assassinated. The very last speech Dr. King gave was to a group of sanitation workers, you know, in the middle of a thunderstorm. He thought no one was going to come. They came anyway. And he delivered one of his best speeches, you know, from the mountaintop speech, where he goes all the way from Plato and Socrates all the way to the present day. And that was one of his best speeches. And he delivered it to. Yeah, that's it. That's one of my favorite quotes, man. Your staff, and they got it. They got it, man. I really appreciate them bringing this stuff up. But yeah, man.
Yeah, if that's, it,
you know,
I'll read it from Dr. King. Here, go ahead and throw that back up, please, if you would. The quote from Martin Luther King: "If it falls your lot to be a street sweeper, sweep streets as Raphael painted pictures. Sweep streets as Michelangelo carved marble. Sweep streets as Beethoven composed music." Or Shakespeare wrote poetry. Absolutely. And that's the thing, is really just having pride and just being a human and not thinking that government can like debase us or treat us the wrong way. Like they're not entitled to do that.
So. Absolutely. They're not. No. And so people should reclaim their dignity and declare their independence. Yet again, that's what the Declaration of Independence was. It was a declaration of dignity, that we are human beings and that no one is above anybody else, and that we get to dictate our government, not some kings who wear powdered wigs or anything like that, but human beings. We, the people, get to decide what happens with our country, what happens with our future, which is why I'm super optimistic for the future, which is why I'm super optimistic, because I know, you know, Washington knew something when he wrote his farewell address, that we should strive for national unity, and we will get there. It's a long road, but we're going to get there.
Yeah, I agree. Where can people find you? Where can they support? Oh, we got uh-oh. Well, that's a cheap imitation, a pale imitation of George Washington. Right there.
People can support us. And if they want to bring these ideas to the Bronx, then go to votevega.nyc. We are currently raising funds. We need about $15,000 to put out a mass distribution of this leaflet, of putting this corruption out there on the airwaves. And we need boots on the ground to distribute it. So you can hit the donate button or the volunteer button or both if you can. So that's votevega.nyc. And people can also find me on my social media handles at VoteVega26. That's my X account right there. That's a picture of me getting dragged away at an event on October 16th, 2023, 10 days or 9 days after October 7th. Yeah, that's right. 9 days after October 7th, I stood up at Temple Emmanuel, one of the largest synagogues in New York City, where Rachel Maddow herself came to speak. And I told her she was going to get this wrong. She was going to support the Israelis, and that there was, in fact, an ethnic cleansing happening in Gaza, and it needed to be talked about.
Wow.
So, VoteVega.nyc.
And really quick, just give us a few big names you've confronted on the street.
Oh, absolutely. Hakeem Jeffries, I had confronted him on the Nord Stream revelations. My opponent, Richie Torres, Rachel Maddow, the executive editors of the New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, Reuters, AOC confronted her. Mike Pompeo confronted her. Nancy Pelosi, I had the pleasure of calling her a sad old drunk.
Nice.
What's that one? Yeah, Paul Krugman, this economist from the New York Times. You know, Kamala Harris confronted her as well. So many people. Joe Biden. A lot of people that I confronted, and I'm going to keep doing it too. And I would urge people join me in that as well.
Phenomenal. Men on the street work, New York District 15, running against Richie Torres. Jose Vega, thank you for your time, man.
Thank you for having me and letting me go off on Bertrand Russell that way.
Oh, 100%, man. That was a great clip. We'll put that out. I'll send it to you. Thank you, Jose Vega.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to be right back after this break with more. And I got some top stories for you that you want to hear, more COVID news. And I do have something about a classified Soviet study that we're going to get to after the spring.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks, you've seen the deplatforming, you've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Doing what we can to stop World War III on the network. That's AJN Live. That's War Room Live. Share live links, live feeds, repost, retweet the stream. Tell your friends about the War Room. Tell your friends about the Alex Jones Network in general. And even our website if they want to get phenomenal supplements. I'm your host, Rex Jones. Follow me, Rex Jones News, with the Z on Twitter. I want to continue the roundup on what's happening in the Middle East, and then I want to relate that to what's happening at home, both with the domestic economy and the domestic censorship agenda. Both parties of which are getting exactly what they wanted through this war. I got Greenblatt of the ADL, and then I got a leading senator, Dave McCormick, talking about how are we going to win the midterms? Oh, we're just going to bark about the economy. But first, the human cost of all of this. Trump, Hegseth clashed at Camp David over Iran missile depletion concerns. I went over this earlier, but I want to get back into it. Trump vented at Hegseth that he thought the munitions issue had been fixed. There is no fixing it. I just want to remind you again. You can't pull these out of your butt. You can't invent them. You can't spend gems on it like it's Clash of Clans to speed up the timer. It's going to be years and years and years until we have these things again. And you would say this makes absolutely no sense to do to our country. This, you know, hurts our citizens, kills our soldiers, gives them traumatic brain injuries. Here's the article I was looking for. All right, I made a little bit of error there, but there we go. Iran war renews concerns about the lasting toll of traumatic brain injuries to U.S. troops. There you go. Look at this. So we have over 500 casualties, like injuries, like wounded over there. Not apparently in action because Trump says it's not a war, even though it's a 47-year conflict that we're going to fight for another 20 that we already won, which we know is ridiculous. But over 500 people, we don't know how badly they're injured, but the amount of TBIs, the lasting effects of traumatic brain injuries, are raising fresh concerns about the toll of the Iran war on American troops who are suffering those wounds due to a conflict without a clear end. Nearly, 700 U.S. Service members have been wounded by drone and missile attacks on bases. Everything's under control. I'm going to read that again. Nearly 700 U.S. service members have been wounded by drone and missile attacks on bases in the Middle East and other fighting. Most have experienced most, you say. Oh, so it's not somebody getting a hangnail. It's not somebody, I don't know, tripping on a banana peel and, you know, hurting their back somehow. Most of these people, 700, most, this is AP. It's like when my dad said, we got Axios, AP, Reuters, all saying the same thing. This is AP saying it, all right? Most of these people have experienced traumatic brain injuries and returned to duty. Isn't that good? So it's like being in the UFC, right? Well, Uncle Sam asked you to sign up and get in the ring. And sure, you know, you might get 1, 3, 5 traumatic brain injuries. Not going to say how severe it is. We're not going to. It's all good. Go back in the service. You know, we'll put you in another base that can't be defended. Yeah, exactly. It's the concussion Olympics, the concussion war, because we can't defend our own people. The Pentagon's chief spokesman, Sean Parnell, last month called the vast majority of injuries over a 2-week period minor concussions. So that's like the reminds me of the NFL. Not good. ... Not good. No bueno. No bueno. Muy mal. Very bad. Right? And we don't believe what they say. And this is what they say. Here's what the doctor says. Concussions are often termed mild TBIs, and many people recover within weeks. But sometimes those with seemingly mild initial symptoms go on to have problems persisting for months or years, such as headaches, dizziness, or difficulties with memory or attention. That's sometimes called brain fog. Doctors have no way to predict who will suffer lasting. Isn't that nice? A lottery of lasting brain injury, a vexing enough question that there's medical debate over whether to retire the term mild TBI. Yeah, I don't think there's a mild traumatic brain injury. I don't think that exists. A mild TBI. Repeated blows are known to increase the chances of lasting problems, including a degenerative brain disease called chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. Now, that's real UFC boxing stuff there. CTE Olympics. It has gained attention for links to deaths in the NFL and other sports. No deaths in the UFC. It's imperative that people recover from a concussion before doing activities, blah, blah, blah. We put them back into service. We put them in another base. And like I said, none of these bases can be defended. So what are we even doing? I want to go ahead and go to clip 18. I want to show people what exactly GOP thinks about this.
Senator, the war in Iran is unpopular, and we still have $4 gas. How do we get around that for the midterm elections?
Well, good to be with you, Stuart. I mean, I think the big picture here is we need to go out and continually talk to people about the progress we've made on the economy. The truth of the matter is wages are up. The truth of the matter is that business investments up in Pennsylvania. We have tens of thousands of new jobs because of the president's policies. These are great jobs for welders, pipe fitters, steam fitters. We've got in the big, beautiful bill, the Working Families Tax Cut Act, a child care tax credit, no tax on tips. People are taking advantage of that. So there is no doubt that they are economically much better off than they were under President Biden. At the same time, they're still feeling the pressure. And as you said, gas prices are up. Healthcare is too expensive. Energy prices are still up. We need to do a lot more on permitting reform. So I think the way to talk about this is here's where we are. we've made enormous progress, but here's the pathway ahead and why we need to have Republican majorities in the House and the Senate to get more good things done for the American people.
Not a thing about ending the war. Not a thing about the TBIs and the nearly 700 U.S. service members that AP News is reporting most have experienced traumatic brain injuries, and they're calling them mild TBI, mild trauma. You know, it's not a big deal, just a little bit of brain damage. It's healthy. It makes you tougher. You fight in Israel's wars better if you have more brain damage. So we're going to send you off to another base that can't be defended. Now I want to show Greenblatt, all right? I want to show Greenblatt, who's very happy about the overall situation. Go to clip 19.
Look, you worked for Obama, you worked for Clinton, sure, in the economics part, but what have you made of Trump's approach on Iran? Like, is this something that you're thinking, good on him for being the president that stood up to the Iranian regime, or has America got itself into another forever war here?
Look, there is a forever war going on that was started by Iran. The Islamic Revolution, since 1979, Iranian school children and Iranian leaders have said every day, death to America. We don't say death to Iran. They declared war against us in 1979. They took our people hostage. They murdered in Tehran. They murdered our Marines in Beirut.
I've been good about pausing today. We're going to go ahead and pause it. We don't say death to Iran. We didn't blow up their elementary school in the middle of negotiations. We didn't kill the Ayatollah in the middle of negotiations. We attacked. We started the war twice. All right. Israel started 12-day war, right? But we went in with joint strikes February 28th. They covered it live at like 2 a.m. in the morning. So, like, just keep playing him, man. Keep playing him.
Heard our people in the Khobar bombings in sub-Saharan Africa. They have murdered, by the way, Jewish people all over the world as well. This is a rapacious, brutal, tyrannical regime that, again, has said very openly they want to destroy America, let alone they want to destroy the state of Israel. And they have wrought havoc all over the region. So to be really honest with you, James, like, I do really respect the fact that President Trump took action against a government that was committed publicly to destroying the United States and to destroying the state of Israel. He's the only one who did it. Now, there may be ways I might suggest he could have prosecuted this war a little bit differently. But look, I'm not a four-star general. I'm not. So I find it interesting all the armchair kind of generals telling him what he should or shouldn't have done. But the bottom line is that we shouldn't forget there is a forever war. It was declared against the United States. This is a radical, revolutionary Islamist regime that wants to spread Sharia law all over the Middle East and that wants to destroy the West. And, you know, they threaten Europe and the Europeans do nothing. They threaten American for years. We didn't do nearly enough. They threaten their own neighbors like Saudi Arabia. I'm glad that we've stood up to them. And I hope at the end of the day, for the sake not just of America or Israel, but for the sake of the Iranian people, that this brutal dictatorship falls.
So he calls it a war, right? He calls it a war. When did the war start? He says it started 47 years ago. That's not how wars work. All right. It started when we bombed the elementary school or when we did Midnight Hammer. That's when you have to make that calculation. That's when the U.S. got involved in kinetic operations against Iran. There it is right there. 165 girls and their teachers burned to death. That's a Holocaust. He's a Holocaust denier. He cries about that all day, whatever. He denies mass death by fire. That's what that is. It's done on behalf of Israel by the United States, right? And President Trump, about this attack that happened in Manab, he came out with Hegseth, I think it was on the Air Force One, and said, we think it was Iran. They're very imprecise with their munitions. We're running an investigation. Well, there is no investigation when you're president of the United States, and I think it was over 2 Tomahawk missiles get dropped on this school. Only 4 other countries have those. France, UK, Germany, and Japan. That's it. That's the number. So it would be impossible for them to like telepathically generate a missile over their own elementary school before or during the initial like few hours of the attack, right? Like day one, basically like within the first day, look up the date of the attack so we can get that right. Within the first day, this happens along with the killing of the Ayatollah. And keep in mind, he just said, oh, the war is amazing. War is great. War is awesome. We're defeating the regime, destroying, obliterate, whatever. We also are going to do color revolution, and they're going to put Reza Pahlavi in charge, and it's going to be an amazing kumbaya, and the Iranian people just need to be given the Second Amendment. This is what Lindsey Graham was saying when he was waddling around the earth before he died of his death, right? He was saying, they just need the Second Amendment option. But at the same time, they're radical cavemen lunatics, and we got to kill all of them. Because keep in mind, over 30 million people in Iran alone showed up for the Ayatollah's funeral. That's a third of the country. What they sold, the bill of goods in January, they did it. They did a failed color revolution. Look at that. The attack on the school in Iran, the elementary school, was February 28th, 2026. So that is literally the first hours of the attack is when that took place. Iran did not blow up one of our bases first. Iran did not attack Israel first. We attacked. What did Marco Rubio say? What did he say? Israel was going to attack. We feared American soldiers would die in the retaliation. So we had to join in, blah, 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 to minimize American casualties or whatever the end of the quote is. I'm paraphrasing there. We had to get involved because another power, a foreign nation, a foreign government took us to war. And we didn't get any choice on that. We didn't get any choice at all. And that's not fair. That's not fair to you. That's not fair to me. That's not fair to anybody that voted for the peace president. Look at this. Rubio suggests U.S. strikes on Iran were influenced by Israeli plans. The U.S. Secretary of State says he hopes Iranian people overthrow the regime. Can we see the quote in the article? And here's the thing. He likes to pretend, Rubio likes to pretend that he's not involved. He is involved. All right. And it's really smart politically to try to be off camera as much of this administration as possible, because it is a dumpster fire. But it is a dumpster fire that is really leaps and bounds advancing the agenda of like the Zionist occupied government, military industrial complex, transnational capital, international billionaires, like all the elites, everyone that you can name. It's doing basically everything that they would want. Right. So like, where do we go from here? I think that if he tries to run in 2028, I think that will be exposed. We know that there was going to be Israeli action, Rubio said. We knew that it would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched these attacks, we would suffer higher casualties. Pre-crime, and not even pre-crime, they knew that Israel was going to commit the crime. We knew that we would be hurt because we're their guardian in the region, big brother protecting them with all these bases that are around Iran. We had to do it. We had to win. It was a knockout blow, a knockout punch. We were going to win in 24, 48 hours. Remember all the people saying that? Crew, can we find some examples of people saying 24 to 48 hours? Famously, Dave Rubin, savant and the child slaver, said that we wouldn't be able, or that they wouldn't be able to close the strait. They would not be able to close the strait, ladies and gentlemen. You know, we don't have to worry about that. He was even like, I'm not some grand prediction guy, but I'm wise and I know this X, Y, Z. And it's just like, dude, that is completely ridiculous. They've been prepping for the war for 20 years. They fought a war against Saddam Hussein where we backed Saddam and we gave Saddam chemical weapons, and they lost hundreds of thousands of their own people. They had little children with headbands, message keys to heaven on their head, walking through minefields. Hey, go ahead and play this from the beginning. Let's see how this is aged. This is Dave Rubin. I'm liberal. I work for Daily Wire. Ugh. Here, play it with audio.
I need to make a prediction here in my prediction stuff. I'm not Polly Market. I'm not Kalshi, but I'm pretty good at predictions. And my prediction here is that everything that the media is now going to say about Iran's going to close the Strait of Hormuz and energy prices are going to go crazy and all these, none of this is going to come to pass. That isn't to say there won't be a little bumps here and there in the market, and it's not to say one random thing, you know, bad thing might happen to a ship or something like that. But Iran has basically, their military has basically been decimated. So they can keep doing PR stunts and having the second general of the fourth command of the third wing of the Iranian army show up on MSNBC. They can keep do that and make his threats and say, we're going to let things through if we like you and not if we don't. But it just is utterly irrelevant. We are the sheriff. Allow me.
We are the sheriff. Look at this elitist neocon bragging about how we killed their leadership. Oh, yeah, we killed the leadership, the 50, 60-year-old people that were around for the Iran-Iraq war. You know who the people we were trying to negotiate were? Those older group of people, the younger people, they really hate America. They really hate us, and they really hate it when we kill their leadership. So if we're killing their leadership and we've decimated their military and it's all basically over and they can't close the strait, how are we sitting here 100 plus days later where he's been proven totally wrong? And that's the whole entire attitude of our government as well. And they refuse to admit it. They still operate within a frame of mind where they're like, oh, we can just do this blockade. Well, if the Venezuela operation was costing over $1 billion a day, which I reported on it at the time, I believe that it was, or close to it, What is this costing? What does this cost the American people right now? 39 days of war, $113 billion. Throw that article back up if you would. Trump says Iran war objectives nearing completion in address to nation. Yeah, exactly. So that's in April. Are you waking up yet? You smelling the roses yet? You see how this is a war? See how it's a war of choice? See how he did it? He lied about it. He lies about it to this day. He lies about it multiple times a day. You can pay him $100,000 a month and get notifications, updates before everyone else does about how he's lying about it to manipulate the market. Or he could just do business with his family and make billions of dollars. 159 days, 16 hours, 49 minutes, 47 seconds, 47th president. Potato president. Really, not good. Believe me, not good. I believe that's a Trump quote from back in the day. Let's go ahead and go to clip number 12 really quick.
What makes you think this will be different? Because they tend to never...
It may be, it may not be. I think that the threat of this... this was more than a threat. We were ready to go. And, you know, in life, they know when you're ready to go and when you're just bluffing. No, we were ready to go. And we are ready to go. We have to do this.
Pretty crazy. America's got to talk like that now, right? Pretty crazy. We got to do the pufferfish strategy like that, right? Because there was a time, not even 35, 30 years ago, we did have a military that would have been capable of doing an operation kind of like this. Would have had to do ground troops like we did in Iraq. But, you know, maybe feasibly they could have done it. Even if they put everybody in service involved in this war right now, they would still need a draft and boots on the ground to do it. They don't have the munitions. They don't have the equipment. And the United States military policy is that it has to be able to fight two major conflicts and a regional conflict all at the same time. We have definitely dropped below that level. And there's going to come a time where Russia comes knocking, where China comes knocking. And because of the expense that we put ourselves in this war for foreign power, we're not going to have the ability to protect ourselves. And to people that think that's not a reality, people think that, well, you know, just because the world order has been what it's been for the past century, you know, it's not about to change now. I think we're all very normalcy biased. I think hell is coming. Trump says new talks are Iran's last chance to make deal before decapitation. Well, they already did the decapitation. It's like a hydra. It doesn't work. It's a stupid analogy. President Trump, go ahead. Keep that up there. President Trump said his decision not to escalate the war in Iran over the weekend was Iran's last chance to make a deal. He also said he called off attacks because Gulf allies asked him to. MBS called him. Of course, threatening new strikes and then calling them off is something he's done many times. The Taco attack, of course. Yeah, so it didn't work the first time. It's not going to work the 100th time. And you don't have the ability to take out their equipment, their facilities like you did, because in the original period of the 39-day war, you couldn't get it done. So if you can't get it done then, you can't really get it done now. And when you take people domestically at home with the reality of the midterms coming up, and you tell them, played that Dave McCormick guy, just he went on a complete ChatGPT Claude-generated Fable 5 ChatGPT rant about, oh, what's the economy? Got to focus on the economy. New Republicans do amazing things on the economy, the economy, the economy. Here's the thing. You can have a primary and you can destroy the America First patriotic candidate and put the neocon in and have this big party about how you're the strong liberal or whatever, which is what all these people represent. They're really liberals. They're minos, MAGA in name only. But when you run against the Democrat and this saying, talk about the economy, you can't drown them out on that the same way you can drown somebody out on your own side, and they'll bring up the war, they'll bring up the coffins. When you're confronted with that in the general election, the independent voter is going to turn on you. That is, I see it as just a very simple political reality, political fact. And then when these people lose in the midterms, they will turn around and B-word and moan and blame us. And we will say, it is not us that violated our promise. It was you. You did the opposite of what we voted for. And that's a big problem to us. And if you ever want us to vote Republican again, you have to disavow genocide, disavow the war, disavow the spending, disavow the corruption, disavow the occupied government that we very clearly have. And they're not going to be willing to do that unless they're shown in the midterms that, you know, it's not all peaches and Creamville, because it's not. And just like I was talking about with Jose, $20 burrito, you don't need to eat that. Just live in the four person to one apartment situation and you'll be fine. I'm Dan Crenshaw. That's what I did. In a time where there was advancement in a time where you could start a business and not worry about World War III, in a time where, you know, the social safety net and everything hadn't been completely eroded in America and we still had more of a homogenous society. It's just so privileged to look at what we have now, like as him saying he has privilege, looking at what we have now and saying, oh, well, the younger generation just has to figure it out. Think about just the oasis, the paradise of going to Taco Bell and buying something for like $2 that could feed an entire family. And think about the reality now. There is no convenience. There is no cheap rent. There is no cheap electricity. You pay everything on a meter. Oh, cable went away. Cable went away. You got streaming services now. They gouge you at every step. They get you to gamble. They get you to watch porn. They get you to distract yourself. They get you to eat bad food, get you to eat the poison, the goy slop, you name it. And they turn around and say, oh, but it was you that made these decisions. It was you that decided to eat the goy slop and engage in this behavior. You fed us poison. You filled our environment with it from day one. We were children. We never had a chance. And the people that were older and the people that knew about it and the people that tolerated it, this is why I talk about the younger generation. We are very, very upset about this. We want to find a solution. The people that say the problem's always going to be the problem existed in a time where the problem was not a problem for them at all. And they didn't have to think about it. Everyone is aware of politics now. Everyone is aware of the war now. Everyone is aware of Epstein now. Everyone is aware of the corruption all around them. And in a world with the cell phone where everybody is present on social media and sees the war crimes, sees the spending, sees the contradictions over and over and over again. Again, I raise you the peace, President. In that world, you know, a few Lego videos and a few ballistic missiles and drones, they can topple a global hegemon. And especially if the global hegemon decides that it just doesn't care about being a hegemon anymore, just wants to make money. We have traded our power for money. Our elites have done that to us. And we have no money anyway because the money was always fake. That's the emperor's new clothes. That's the deal that was given to America. But I'm Rex Jones News, Rex Jones News with a Z. You can find me. I do a daily morning show, New American Journal, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. every single day, live for 4 hours. We play a documentary as well. I need to take a tiny little bit of a long weekend, but I'll be right back on Tuesday for you guys. New American Journal. Go follow that on Rumble right now, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. I am live every day. Multiple hosts. On Tuesday, we do Gray Area Talks, ex-New American Journal, which means Tim joins me. Tim Tompkins hosts the Gray Area with me, my co-host. On Thursday and Sunday, 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. Usually that's how we do it. Sunday, we have a marquee show, always have phenomenal guests for you. And that's really, it's been so awesome on this network to really learn how to book people, learn how to schedule people, and learn how to really, you know, do the network TV thing. I'm trying to do that on my own, an internet talk show, radio talk show on TV. So happy to do it for you guys. Just find me, Gray Area Talks, YouTube, Rumble, and then New American Journal on Rumble, on X, on Instagram. I got a link tree in my profile. Also got the link tree right there. And if you want to, I got 50% off.com. I have Knockout Sleep Support and I have Brain Force. 50% off.com. If you want to get some cool stuff, I got it there. I'll see y'all tomorrow.
Fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you, Meta, Facebook is watching you, Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.